Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Attempted Adults with Chris Marai. And I have a few really special guests in the studio with me today. We have Amelia Wendorsky. Say hello.
Hi, everyone.
And Sarah Seitz.
Mm-hmm.
And Sarah Seitz.
Hi.
And today we're going to be doing a really cool episode on therapy and finding a therapist and thinking about stigma and POC communities around these different issues. We are currently at Smith College today, and we're going to have a lot of fun. Are you guys excited?
Yes.
Definitely.
Yeah.
A little nervous, too?
A little bit.
For sure.
Is it your first time on a podcast?
Yes, it is.
Yes, for both of us.
Okay. So, to tell you a little bit about them, I'm going to ask them to just introduce themselves a little bit and why this topic is important to them. And maybe even some identities that they hold if they feel comfortable.
Okay. So, hi, I'm Amelia. I'm a senior at Smith College. And I started getting really interested in mental health in high school when I started having some trouble with, like, anxiety. And I'd experienced something kind of traumatic. And I was, like, trying to work through those feelings. So then I started going to therapy. And then when I got to college, I realized a lot of my friends had a lot of questions about what therapy is. There was a lot of curiosity, some misconceptions. So I started getting involved with mental health education work and advocacy on Smith campus. And some of my friends and I co-founded Active Minds, which is a mental health education and advocacy org.
That's awesome. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the work that the org has done thus far? You've been a really big part of that.
We started about 2 years ago, and in that time, we've hosted a couple mental health forums where students could come and share their concerns about seeking mental health services on campus, where they thought there were shortcomings, where they thought that our health center was doing a good job. We also have done 2 mental health visibility campaigns that sought to destigmatize help seeking for psychological distress. And most recently, we had an interactive mental health display art gallery that encouraged people to think about all the different facets for supporting their own mental health.
Thank you for that. And just to think about Sarah and why this is important to you.
Sure. So I'm a social worker, and I went to the Smith Social Work School, and let me think. I think it's hard to sort of separate my identities from why I'm interested in this. So just in terms of my identities, I am a mid-30s, mixed race, Asian and white, cis female social worker. And I use she, her pronouns. I am fairly new to the Counseling Center at Smith, and it's my first time working specifically with students who are in college, but as somebody who had a really rough time in college as a student, I have a lot of just interest in working with college students who I think are thinking about, like, really fascinating identity issues and life issues, and often, sometimes, like, approaching therapy for the first time, but definitely a lot of people are coming in with like, prior experience going to therapy. But it feels like at this time in life, and that, like, being in college, there's just a lot of stuff to talk about and really interesting things to sort of dig through in therapy.
So both of you are either students now or were students recently,
mm-hmm.
Whether that is on the graduate level or the undergraduate level. And what are some things that students are dealing with when it comes to their mental health, psychological distress, that you both are seeing either with your peers or with the students that you're working with? And what are some things that we can do as a community to better support the folks around us?
I think that I have a lot of friends who are struggling with, like, imposter syndrome, and trying to figure out what their identities are, what their identities mean for their values, for what they're doing in college. There's, like, a lot of identity work, a lot of trying to figure out who people are. And I think I also see some people struggling with things with their family, whether or not their family is supportive of them having, like, mental health struggles or seeking help for mental health. I think that's what I see some of my friends going through.
That was a really good list of things. I think just to add on to that, I think that the college environment and the systems that are part of being a student are pretty rigid, and I think it's a tall order to ask thousands of people to fit into a structure and a system that isn't built for them. Mm. And I think that a lot of what comes up as issues around depression or anxiety or feeling overwhelmed or struggling with just keeping up with academic work is connected to trying to fit into a system that isn't built for most people. And so I tend to think that there are a lot of systemic issues that are also like root causes of what comes up in the college counseling center.
So you guys can correct me if I'm wrong from either of your perspectives, but something that I've heard a lot from students that I work with and peers is someone doesn't want to see a therapist because of whatever stigma around it, or even just because they feel like their issue isn't big enough. Like, is there an issue that is too small to want to talk to someone about?
So I have a kind of not hot take that anyone and everyone could benefit from therapy. That isn't necessarily realistic in a college setting where, like, our counseling center has a limit to how many people they can see. But I do hear a lot of people say, like, oh, I want to go to the Schacht Center, I want to get counseling, but I'm scared, like, other people have more important issues than me. And what I try and tell them is that if it's something that is causing them distress and causing them to not be living their fullest and happiest life, they deserve to have a space where people make room for those feelings and there's someone to talk through those feelings with them. And it's okay to try and get an appointment. And if it really is something that shouldn't be something you're working through with a therapist, it's, I think, on the therapist to communicate that with you and, like, work with you to make another plan or help you find other resources that might be more appropriate for supporting you as you work through those issues. I don't know how you feel about that.
I agree. I think that there's really, I think every individual person is the expert on themselves. And so if there's something that's, like, on your mind, it doesn't have to be something that, you know, is like, it doesn't have to be dire in order to just want to talk to somebody about it. I think you're right that there can be a misconception that, like, someone needs to be truly, deeply having a really, really hard time in order to talk to somebody. And I think the purpose of therapy is also to explore and to think and to understand. It's not necessarily only in times of crisis. In fact, I think it works so much better if it's not just in times of crisis. And also the scarcity is real in terms of, like, demand is higher than supply. Like, there are more people who need services than there are therapists in the counseling center. However, the counseling center is designed to meet with people at least once to assess, like, what their needs are and to co-create a plan between the therapist and the client to be able to figure out next step. So maybe that next step is moving to an off-campus therapist, but I really do encourage people to come in and have that initial appointment and just see what it's like, see how it feels. And you can also talk about the fact that you feel self-conscious coming in and you're not sure if your problem is big enough, and see what your therapist has to say.
Okay, so we've mentioned some misconceptions that people have about going to therapy, and I'm wondering about what to expect if it's my first time, whether I am on a college campus or I'm not, because our followers are actually between the ages of 18 and 35 for the most part. So if I'm someone out in the community, like, what do I expect to find? Like, does my therapist, like, I don't know how to put it exactly, but I think I've heard from folks that, like, they sometimes expect their therapist to fix their problems and to tell them, like, the answers, and I'm there like, that's not what they do. So can you talk a little bit about what to expect from both of your perspectives and, like, what is and what isn't therapy?
Sure, I can go first. I think therapy can be so many things, and that's because I think therapy is based in a relationship between you and another human being. And I say that to emphasize that, like, both the client and the therapist are human beings who come with their, walk into the room with their own histories, their own multiple identities, some shared, some not. And I think the reality is that for a first appointment, oftentimes there's some awkwardness, in the same way that it's awkward to sit down and meet a totally new person for the first time and be expected to engage in like a 45-minute conversation. So I think that like the awkwardness is real, and it's not a sign that you're not doing the right thing or that it's not the right fit. I think it's just going to take a little bit of time for two human beings to kind of get used to each other in the room. In that first appointment, usually the therapist will ask like a pretty broad range of questions in order to get a general sense of what brings you in today. And those questions might involve like some inquiry into your history, into your some of your life experiences, what your day-to-day mood is like, questions about identity, like do you have any things like parts of your identity that you're hoping to explore, family history, because there can be hereditary factors playing into what's going on with you today. So don't be surprised if it feels a little bit scattered, in the sense that the therapist might be jumping around a little bit, and hopefully your therapist or the clinician would be checking in about that and kind of taking the temperature to see how you're feeling throughout that initial appointment. And I also encourage you to ask questions, because the therapist, they're going to be asking you a lot of questions. It's your right and also responsibility, I think, in some way, if you can, to ask questions that feel important to you.
Something that I found helpful going into my first counseling appointment, or when I meet with a new therapist for the first time, is making a list of the reasons I'm seeking therapy, because sometimes people find that when you get in a room with a new person and they're like, so what brings you in today? Your brain can kind of freeze up. So that was really helpful for me when I was first shopping around for therapists, mm-hmm. when I was in high school. And it doesn't have to like fit with a diagnostic scheme. I think it's important to be more focused on like your bigger life picture than like, oh, I have this DSM diagnosis and I'm trying to not have it anymore. Something else that people might wonder about, and people might have some anxieties about with going to therapy, is thoughts about judgment from their therapist. It can be pretty scary to talk to a stranger and tell them the deepest, darkest secrets of your soul. Mm-hmm. And it was helpful for me to learn about something called unconditional positive regard, mm-hmm. Which is the idea that kind of like your therapist is supposed to be on your team and on your side. And I've told therapists a lot of really wild that I've done, some like maybe ill-informed choices, but I've never felt judged by any of them. I think it can be hard to trust someone right away with things like that, but I think most people who are drawn towards being a clinician generally aren't judgmental. They're more just like curious and caring. So even if you've like done something that societally might be considered bad or like not the correct thing to do, I encourage people to like talk through it in therapy, because mm-hmm. they're not there to judge you, they're there to help you.
So one thing I would want to add to that is that therapists usually are in therapy themselves, mm-hmm. and one of the helpful things I can say as a clinician is that going to my own therapy reminds me of how real those fears are, or those worries are, when you're sitting in the client seat. And not to sound cheesy, but I feel like it keeps me humble in terms of remembering that it's really fucking scary to talk to somebody and tell them stuff that feels private and potentially like judgment worthy, and to open up about that with someone that, you know, like where you don't know that much about them. And I am trying to push myself as to ask, like, or to say, like, I'm worried that you're judging me about that, or I feel like a part of me worrying that, like, you're not going to like me if I say what I'm about to say. And just to put that out there and see how the therapist responds.
Yeah, I think it's important to really remember that therapy is a relationship, and you're allowed to, like, ask for things in that relationship, and you're allowed to voice concerns.
Mm-hmm.
I used to think it was, like, a very passive thing where, like, I felt like my therapist was, like, doing therapy on me.
Mm-hmm.
But it's more about working together. And I definitely encourage people, like, if you're feeling some type of way, or, like, your therapist said something and you're like, what's going on with that,
mm-hmm.
To address it, because it's good. It helps to talk things through.
Yeah.
So I come from a community that is very anti-therapy. I come from a very religious background. All of you know that at this point. And one thing that I've heard is you don't need to talk to a human about it. If God is, you know, what you believe in, and God will fix it for you. And so that's always been something that I struggled with early on, is that even if I felt good about seeking therapy, the people around me always made me feel shame around that. And I was wondering, like, how to think about that and how to work through that. And I guess it's okay to talk to your therapist about, like, those feelings that you're having,
mm-hmm.
and figuring out how you can move through them. And maybe therapy isn't for you in a particular way, and maybe it looks differently. I don't know. Maybe it's not, like, sitting one-on-one with someone,
mm-hmm.
but maybe it's doing some kind of self-care and then checking in with someone every once in a while, but figuring out what that means to you.
Yeah. I think that's one of those situations where it might be, like, if you are seeking a therapist, to seek a therapist who lists, like, spirituality and religion as, like, a specialty area. Because I think, just like you're saying, Chris, there are lots of therapists who come to this work coming out of a background that maybe is, that where they were raised with a certain religion or spirituality, and they can identify with a lot of the struggles that you might be having, and would be able to talk at length about what it's like to have come from that kind of background where therapy is stigmatized, and to be seeking therapy anyway, and, like, the internal judgments or criticisms that might be coming up.
Yeah, I think that's really helpful to think about, because another thing that folks usually talk to when I'm advocating, or say to me when I'm advocating for folks to see a therapist, is, well, it has to be someone of my identity. It has to be someone who understands what I've been through. And I've actually found, like, that it really just depends on the person that you're with. It doesn't always have to do with the identities that they specifically hold or what you can see, but more of, like, just the way that you interact with them. And I'm thinking about one of the first times I saw a therapist, and I was very new to it. And I think we had similar identities, but I'm Caribbean background and she wasn't. And one of the things that we had the biggest struggle around was, like, my relationship with my mom. Like, she would just say things to me like, oh, well, you should just do this, or it's your life, you get to own it. And I'd be like, yeah, but that's not how it works where I come from. So I was just hoping that you guys can talk a little bit about, like, identities and fit, and just kind of go, like, have a little conversation about that wherever it takes you.
Yeah. So I've kind of had a few different therapists who, like, we share identities to varying extents. For a bit of background, I am queer and mixed race, white, and also from the Filipinx diaspora. And there was one point where I was seeing a therapist over the summer, and she was also mixed race, also went to a women's college, like, also just, like, also queer, like, shared a lot of identities. And, like, that was really powerful because we could do a lot of identity work, and it felt like we had the same, like, shorthand that we were working from, and that was helpful. But I have also worked with a therapist for a really long time who is white, and I've also found that to be really helpful to step back and like have to articulate what's going on and not work off of the assumption of a shared background, because I've learned just because you have the same identities doesn't mean that you've had the same experience. Mm-hmm. So I think they can both be powerful, and it's a really individual choice about what kind of work you want to do, what you want from therapy. But also, when it comes down to it, the biggest thing with finding a therapist for me is the vibe. Mm. I feel like it could be any permutation of shared or unshared identities, but when it comes down to it, it's just like, what's the vibe in the room?
Yeah. I think one of the hard things about shopping for therapists is that it is like a time and labor intensive process. And it's also a process where I think there's a lot of emotion attached to it. And it's no small effort to like set up multiple appointments with a variety of therapists, to meet with them, to figure out what the expense is associated with that. And then also to like go into multiple sort of first time meetings where you're laying your stuff out. Right. So I think sometimes the hope is like, if you can find a therapist who shares identities with you, that like maybe it'll be a little easier. And I've just like, the two of you have had experiences where it felt really important to me to see a POC clinician, and then like the therapy just like utterly crashed and burned. And having a lot of successful, or like what felt like more successful therapy with white clinicians, and you know, even that, to this day, I think a lot about, what is that about? Is it that like I'm used to being surrounded by white folks, and so being in therapy with a white clinician feels somewhat more comfortable to me in a certain way? Or so, I mean, I think it's something that's worth like continuing to sort of mull over, and also like, again, bringing into therapy and saying, you can say like, I've been thinking about what it means for me to be working with, you know, a therapist with your identities, and kind of curious, like, if we could talk about, you know, maybe what you think, and to kind of see where your therapist goes with that. I think it's fair also to just bring it up if it's on your mind, even if it's not the most like well thought out thought process, like if it's just kind of keeps popping up in your head.
So I think this has been a really fruitful conversation thus far, and I just kind of wanted to open it up to what you guys are thinking about, or maybe feelings that you're having right now, and like where you want to go from here, like either with the topic or with just, I don't know, just opening it up so we can have a little bit more of conversation.
Mm-hmm. Actually, something that did come up for me earlier when we were talking about spirituality and like seeking therapy and stuff like that, I used to be very strongly religious, like raised in a Catholic background. And something that helped me that maybe would help someone else was to think about the way God works through people, rather than being like, oh, I can only turn to God and Jesus for help. Thinking about like, well, maybe therapy is a form of doing that, and like believing that sometimes God puts people in our lives for reasons, to help us like grow and process, and like trying not to be ashamed of that. That's like kind of tangential to what we're talking about right now. But
have you been able to bring, well, this might be too personal a question, I'm curious if you've been able to bring spirituality like into some of the content of your sessions or to talk about.
Yeah. It's like very it's a lot. I think it's hard because that thought process helped me a lot when I was still in the closet. Mm. But since like coming out and having like feelings about gender and things like that, mm-hmm. I've kind of just like shut that part of myself down. So I think it's good to recognize that someone can know a lot about going to therapy and stuff, but still be trying to figure it out and like trying to figure out how to bring different elements of their identity into a space.
I think that there's this like ongoing theme around curiosity, both like as a client to continue to try to be curious about ourselves and the parts of ourselves that we're like sort of shutting down or we're putting on the back burner until there's like more space or time to unpack that, And then also as like a clinician, to constantly be curious about what is being said in the room. And Chris, this sort of reminds me of like when you said you went to a therapist who didn't kind of get how your mom worked, even though you might have expected her to. And I think that's where it's like, it's so important to feel like you're sitting with a therapist who brings curiosity into their room. And that's something I really have to remind myself too, because people say all sorts of things, but we're not in each other's heads or each other's histories. And even if you share identities, it's important to not assume that someone means a certain thing when they say something. It's really good to ask questions on both sides.
I think that's really important. So thanks for sharing that. And I was just thinking about different aha moments, not just in therapy, but I actually think recently I had one of the strongest like aha spiritual moments. And it was just from speaking with someone who I did not know, who lived across the country. And I happened to like, I happened to have the space to be vulnerable with that person and to open myself up in that moment. And I learned so much about myself and things that like were hurting me that I actually didn't feel like I could talk to my therapist about, or I didn't feel like I could talk to just folks around me about. And it connected me with a human in a way that I really couldn't have expected. Like literally had I've never met that person in real life. Like we had this conversation over video chat, connected through like a mentorship program. And just having that ability to want to connect with her and to open up really allowed something beautiful to happen. So I think allowing yourself to be vulnerable is also a really important process as you are thinking about therapy. And it could be with your therapist and should be with your therapist in a way that feels good for you and also with those around you. But also protect your heart and your space.
Yeah, it's a tall order.
Yeah.
And that's why it, you know, can take a long time, not just, you know, 2 months, but it can take years for some of this stuff, especially as we're growing and changing as human beings, you know, to keep exploring and discovering more about who we are and who we're becoming.
So I think if y'all are good here and have nothing else you want to explore, Amelia wanted to talk a little bit about the scary bits of, you know, seeking any kind of healthcare, really. But when you see a therapist, usually there's some kind of insurance that you have to pay. When you're a Smith student, that's not necessarily the case. So this is talking in broader scale. In general, if you're a Smith student, Amelia's going to talk to you about that. But if you're out in the community, this information about insurance is super important, Smith student or not.
Yeah, so I think insurance is really important to know about, because when I was like considering going off campus for therapy, I found that I didn't even know what questions to ask about insurance, didn't even know how to find out what my benefits were. So we're just gonna go through some of the words that are confusing. So the first thing I have is explanations of benefits, which are abbreviated as EOBs, and that can be really relevant to those of you who are still on your parents' insurance. And an EOB is something that is mailed to the home address of whoever pays for the health insurance that explains what someone has used the insurance for, like what benefits have been utilized. And that can out people as going to therapy if you're on your parents' health insurance and an EOB comes home that says that you sought behavioral health interventions. But sometimes you can call your insurance and ask them to change where EOBs are sent. So it depends on your insurance. But I think that's a good thing to know, because a lot of people either don't know EOBs exist, don't know where they go, or don't know that they have some agency about them potentially. And then when it comes to the money part, there's a bunch of different terms. So the first one I'm going to talk about is a deductible, which is the amount that someone has to pay out of pocket before health insurance starts covering things. And that usually runs January to December. But I know for Smith, I think it starts August 17th every year. So an example of that is, one might say, for behavioral health, I have a $500 deductible, which would mean that I would have to pay $500 for therapy out of pocket before insurance kicks in at all and helps at all. And then once insurance kicks in, you either have a copay or coinsurance. A copay is a flat rate that you would pay for something for a health service. So if you had like a $5 therapy copay, that would mean that for every session of therapy, no matter what, you'd pay $5. Coinsurance is a similar idea. It's another way your insurance can bill, and it's done as a proportion. So if you have like a 10% coinsurance, that would mean that you'd pay 10% of what a therapist would charge, and your insurance would cover the other 90%. And then I've never had to deal with this, but there's something called an out-of-pocket maximum, which is a cap on how much money you can spend before insurance starts paying 100% of the costs of your care. Mm-hmm. And this also resets every year. So that's what I found out last night Googling.
Thank you. That's a lot of good information.
That was super helpful. So lastly, I just want to say, even for you millennials and you Gen Zers out there, pick up the phone and call your insurance if you have a question about, you know, all of these really scary terms, because there is someone on the other line that will explain it to you and break it down for you. Phone calling is scary, but it can help.
Yeah.
It can help, and often there's room for negotiation. Mm-hmm. There's room for, like insurance companies ultimately, I think, want to keep you as a customer, so often you can push for what you want, and sometimes they will meet that need.
So with our last like minute of being together, this has been so lovely. Do you guys have any final thoughts or tips or just, you know, moments of love to share with the listeners as we move forward?
I think I would say that it's just important to try and embody that you are worthy of getting help and support. We all go through things and experience life challenges, but just because it's such a common experience doesn't mean that it isn't hard and doesn't mean that it isn't difficult to work through. So just, like, I'm rooting for you wherever you are on your journey.
Those are good words of wisdom, wise words. I think that my advice is to trust your gut when you're looking for a therapist, in the sense that if you don't feel comfortable with someone, it's going to be really hard to let out the stuff that actually is the meat that you want to, or the substance that you want to work on in therapy. If you constantly feel like you're being judged, or you feel uncomfortable just because of the therapist's communication style, you might do a little work, but probably not the kind of work you could do if you just feel at ease. So just check in, and this is a good invitation or a good place to start with, like, trusting yourself and developing your gut instinct. And to, if you're in college, that your college counselors can help you in the process of finding a therapist. And so that might be a great place to start.
And for me, I don't know if I could follow either of those two things, but to really just, you know, this is a way of self-care for some people and might not be for others, and that's also okay. We love you, and we just want you to have a thriving life, and, you know, we'll be here for you. So until next time, thank you for joining us on Attempted Adults with Chris and Amelia and Sarah. Mm-hmm. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thank you.